Welcome to the Water Tower Hour. I am your host, Tim Regan, Head of Business Development at Water Tower Research. In today's special episode, we're going to discuss the 2024 outlook for the materials and chemicals technology sector. To discuss the market, I am joined by Dimitri Silverstein, a senior research analyst at Water Tower Research. Dimitri, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tim. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So, Dimitri, I think a good place to start for our audience, why don't you give us a little background on yourself and an overview of the chemicals and materials technology industry as a whole?
Sure, be happy to do that. So I am, as Tim said, a specialty chemicals and materials or technology materials analyst at the Water Tower Research. Before I came to Water Tower Research, I've covered these sectors for over 20 years for various Wall Street firms as a sell-side analyst. So developed a pretty good knowledge base of both individual companies as well as the various industries and markets they serve. The interesting thing about the specialty chemicals, particularly in materials technology industry, is that it's a very eclectic industry in terms of both the company size, which in public domain range from tens of millions of dollars of market cap all the way to, sort of mid double digits, 60, 70, $80 billion market cap for some of the larger names like Sherwin-Williams or 3M or PPG. It also has a very diverse end markets that this industry addresses. Everything. Basically, if you take a look around you, whether you're driving a car or sitting in the office, everywhere your gaze falls on, there is a specialty chemical or a material that's involved that you see, whether it's the polish at your desk, whether it's the materials that are inside or outside of your computer or iPhone, whether it's the fake leather seat that you may be sitting in driving, or any plastic or any type of material that you can think of or you can see. Companies in this space contribute and supply products to or manufacture the actual end products. As a result, it's a very diverse end market that these industry or these companies address. As a sell-side analyst, I had to pay attention to everything from construction starts to semiconductor production because chemicals are going into all of these markets and everything in between. They also differ by raw material streams. While majority of chemicals that you can think about start as a fossil fuel, so either natural gas or oil, and then there's several process steps that derive different materials that go into different applications. You can also start with minerals, whether it's metals or clays or things of that nature, rare earths, gases. If you're talking about air products or Praxair, which used to be a large domestic company that got acquired and is now essentially private. And then as a result of different end markets and different raw material streams, there's also different supply chains that all of these industries or all the players in this industry participate in. So as I said, it's a very broad industry. It does not represent a big part of S&P 500, but I will dare say that the large companies that do represent a big part of S&P 500 would not be there without the specialty chemicals industry and the products that they produce.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a result of that, I think, I will borrow, Jim Cramer's famous words and say that, there is a bull market somewhere because these companies address different end markets, participate in different raw materials supply chains and in different geographies. There are always opportunities to find stocks on the publicly traded side of this industry that you can invest in from a thematic perspective. For example, if you believe that there's going to be a recovery in the automotive industry, there are stocks within the specialty chemicals and materials technologies that will benefit directly from that trend. If you believe that the construction industry is going to struggle, again, there are stocks in this industry that will be more affected by that than others. If you believe that the ag market is going to come back or any other, if you think China is going to be strong, if you think Latin America is going to come back, given what's happening in Argentina, there are thematic plays that you can have in this industry where you invest in stocks that will allow you exposure to your general investment themes. We talked about sort of especially, I keep using the word specialty chemicals because there's a whole subgroup, companies like Dow and Huntsman, who are more what I would call commodity. And, what's the difference? As one CEO of a specialty chemical company once told me, specialty means not having to compete on price. Now, that's an ideal, and it doesn't always work out that way. You know, there's always been a debate in the industry, what's a specialty chemical versus a low volume commodity. But I would say if you're selling strictly on price, as a producer of polyethylene, for example, or PVC would be somebody like Dow or Olin, then you are in the commodity business. If you're selling a product that has gone through several steps of manufacture, all the way down, let's say, starting with the barrel of oil and getting down to a can of paint, then the guy that sells the can of paint, whether it's PPG or RPM or Sherwin-Williams, they're selling a specialty product. They market their product on performance and functionality, and price is a secondary consideration. So as a result, the industry has some interesting dynamics compared to other manufacturing industries you may think of. For example, one of the first things that jumps at you when you look at these companies is they have fairly low fixed costs as a percentage of their cost of goods sold or as a percentage of their operating expense. And in fact, about 80% of a typical company's cost of goods sold in a specialty chemicals industry is raw material. So raw material in some cases makes up 50% of a revenue dollar, and in some cases even more than that. Consequently, because you don't have a lot of fixed costs that you need to absorb, you're less sensitive to volume changes, both when the volumes are growing, but more importantly for people who are risk-averse, when the volumes are dropping or are stagnant. And the profitability of these companies is driven much more by the relationship between raw material and their selling price, you know, that delta, than they do by volume growth. Raw materials, or prices, I should say, follow raw materials, usually with a lag, both on the way up and on the way down. And it typically takes about a quarter for each process step to pass through the raw material price increase. So, for example, and we'll talk about hopefully in this conversation a little bit later, but when you have an increase in the price of oil or natural gas in, you know, in quarter one, and I'm not saying first quarter of the year, I'm just saying in the first period that we're examining, then prices of polyethylene and polypropylene are going to be going up in the quarter following that. And prices for acrylic resins and polyacrylamide acid will go up a quarter after that. And the price for paint will go up a quarter after that. And the price for paint in your store will go up a quarter after that. So basically, the way to think about it, when you look at the movement of oil or gas, which is something that's easy for people to monitor, as well as oil, you know, movements in ethylene and propylene prices, if you want to figure out where the price of downstream products are going from there, kind of think about that in terms of synthetic steps it takes to get from one point to the other, and about a quarter lag for each step in the production chain.
That's great. I mean, that's super helpful because you really don't think about it in your day-to-day end product usage. This started a year and a, you know, up to a year and a half ago with the pricing changing for the raw materials. So that's definitely helpful, and I appreciate that. Why don't maybe you give us a little overview of how the economic and geopolitical landscape of the last few years has kind of played out in the industry, and kind of how it sets us up for 2024.
Well, I think it's important when we look at 2024 and try to predict what's going to happen with the industry, that it's to look back a year or a year and a half. And as you mentioned, and as I just said, it takes that long for pricing and volume dynamics to change for the industry. So if you look back at 2022, we were coming out of the post-COVID lockdowns, and there was a lot of supply chain disruptions and snags. The most obvious one, or the one that was maybe the most well advertised, was in the semiconductor space, where all of a sudden, particularly the automotive industry, was short of semiconductors. And you've had, as a result, delays in the ramp up of automotive production. And you really had delays in the recovery of many other end markets and geographies as a result of supply chain constraints. That did not get any better, unfortunately, in the beginning of 2022. With the war in between Ukraine and Russia starting, that actually complicated the supply chain and logistics even more, getting out of the Black Sea, the bans against certain Russian products and Belarusian products that have shorted the market as a result, while demand was still there. So a combination of delayed or difficulty in getting the material on time, as well as the inflation that was unleashed by government spending during COVID and shortly after COVID, not just in the US, but in Europe and globally, drove the inflation numbers. So now you had people trying to pre-order or double order, A, because they weren't sure when would be the next time they'll be able to get the material, and B, because they were rightly afraid the next time they order, the price will be even higher. And that really what played out in the end of 2022 and into 2023. So When you look at 2023, you're looking really at the sort of the tail of two halves. In the first half of the year, you had a recovery from some of the snags that we've had in the supply chain. It got easier to get product. It became a sort of a much more reliant supply chain again, which meant that you could get back to just-in-time inventory levels. So in the second half of the year, when that became obvious to everybody, people started working down their inventories, which in some cases inflated to twice their normal levels. As a result, you had a significant decline in demand throughout the supply chain because of inventory reductions that every step of the supply chain was taking. But at the same time, you've seen price of oil and natural gas come down after the spike that they've seen in 2022, and that dragged down the price of downstream products. So you had price deflation, and you also had a slowing raw material environment, again, because of the geopolitical tensions, because of high inflation, and because investors, or not investors, customers, consumers, just weren't feeling so hot about the economy, and were starting to tighten up their belt. So you had a nice recovery in the second half of the year, in the first half of the year, in terms of fundamentals. You had those fundamentals deteriorated a little bit into the second half of the year. The stock market, I would say, probably lagged that in the sense that it got a later start and really peaked kind of in the middle of the year, and then maintained, if you will, through the end of the year. So we finished 2023 up, both in the S&P 500 and Russell 2000, as well as the index that we track of 30 specialty chemical and materials companies that we've put together here at Water Tower Research, basically recapturing the losses of 2022. But it was two years wasted in terms of appreciation, if you want to look at it that way. And as you look towards 2024, I wish I could say that things are getting a lot better, but I think maybe selectively they are in certain markets, but overall, I think that some of these trends will continue. In other words, subdued end market consumer demand, high interest rates, which will probably impact the sentiment negatively and make borrowing costs higher. And again, we have another conflict now in the Middle East that's complicating the supply chain as ships have to be shipped around the Horn of Africa rather than going through the Suez Canal.
Right. I think I saw the stat yesterday. I think it came out that the Egyptian government announced that they lost something like, $400 million because of the new supply chain issues, just from revenue going through the canal, right? And it shows you that every day something can happen. And how do you even, when you look at, I guess really the crystal ball now is not so much 2024, it's how is 2024 playing into 2025, right? Because you got to look that far ahead.
You do in some cases, Tim. You're right. When you look at 2024, I think it really the outlook for publicly traded companies in my industry really does vary by the supply chain, by their end market, and by geographic exposure. I would say at a very high level, being having a North having majority of your sales come from North America is probably going to be the best place to be if you're looking to sift through the companies that way. I would say Europe, especially with what's going on now in Germany and France and some other parts of Europe with citizens expressing their discontent with their government. Europe has never been a strong grower. Every year we start out thinking Europe is going to deliver 2% GDP growth, and by the end of the year we hope that they are not, slipping into a recession. So Europe, as I always talk about, is a kind of a 1% GDP plus or minus 2% type of a growth expectation, and I think we'll be on the lower end of that. China, did not have a particularly strong 2023, is probably going to struggle again in 2024, government spending notwithstanding. So I think, having a Western Hemisphere and particularly North America centered geographic exposure would be something that you would want to look for as an investor. Another thing, if you look at we talked about raw materials declining. Now, for a lot of my companies, volume is going to be hard to come by, volume growth. That's going to be true for almost every industry. But as we talked about earlier, volume is not the key driver for most of my company's earnings power. Most of them come from the delta between raw material and pricing. And while end market pricing is starting to come down, raw material pricing has come down a couple of quarters ago and continues to stay at a lower level. So you're going to continue to get a positive year-over-year comparison of margins, and historically that's been positive for valuations of or multiples of companies in my space. So I think while volume declines and recession fears are going to weigh on investor sentiment, the fact that you're going to have a group of companies like Sherwin-Williams, like PPG, like Avient, companies that take basic raw materials and convert them into a product that's very close to the consumer, if not sold directly to the consumer, I think those companies will see a better year-over-year margin profile that will keep investors, if not happy, then at least offset some of the concerns they have about volume declines. So some of the industries will continue to stay strong. You know, one of the standouts in 2022 was the aerospace industry, defense industry, technology in general, particularly semiconductors, as that market came back from the shortages that it experienced in 21 and early 22. I think that will all continue. So companies that supply into these markets, whether it's consumables like electronic chemicals or ceramics or magnets or catalysts, things like that, they will all do well. So if you look at if you look at Materion, for example, or I'm sorry, Materion, that would be one of the companies that I'm thinking about. Hexion would be another one. You know, these companies provide materials that go into the high-end technology in the aerospace and defense markets, and I think they will do well in 2024, just because that seems to be where the boom is currently. Some companies I mentioned, you know, paints and coatings companies, companies that go into the automotive and transportation markets, building and construction markets, they will probably continue to struggle at least through the first half of the year, primarily because of the inventory correction that I was talking about, which will impact their volumes more than normal. Also because, you know, in terms of paints and coatings, people will trade down probably, and they will go to they will go to a contractor versus a DIY model, and contractor paint just happens to be a little bit less profitable than the DIY paint that companies sell. And same thing with automotive. I think automotive, you're going to have a slower start to the year, but if nothing bad happens and investors sort of regain their confidence by the mid-year, and especially on year-over-year basis, you're going to start seeing a little bit better results in automotive in the second half of the year. Now, unfortunately, there's a couple of markets that I think will continue to struggle for much of 2024, and we may have to wait till 2025 for them to recover meaningfully. And I'm talking about specifically about the agricultural chemicals, so the pesticide manufacturers like FMC, like Corteva. They are going through a very severe industry-wide inventory correction channel, particularly in Latin America, where there's a lot of Chinese competition in addition to high inventory in the generic side of the business. In the past, the ag chem inventory buildup, which happens, you know, maybe twice a decade, I would say maybe once a decade, takes a couple of years to work off. It's not something that can be handled in 1 or 2 quarters. It takes 1 or 2 growing seasons. So you're talking about 18 to 24 months, and we're only maybe 6 to 8 months into it. So I would expect that most of 2024, these companies will continue to struggle with volume and with selling the higher margin specialty blends. Another area where I think you're going to have problems for much of 2024, unfortunately, is in battery metals. So anything from lithium producers to nickel and copper and cobalt producers. You know, EV demand has grown. You know, that was the one bright spot over the last 2, 3 years, is that EV sales continue to grow at double digits and occasionally even triple digit levels. But in 2023, they were not as strong as anticipated. You know, the U.S. pickup has not been as fast as people are expected to be. Another signs that European consumers are starting to turn a little bit, I don't want to say sour, but a little bit more cautious on EV buying. And then, so as a result, you've had a lot of accumulation of finished battery grade materials with the battery manufacturers or with anode and cathode manufacturers, which you saw pricing of lithium and nickel start declining mid-year pretty precipitously. Unfortunately, that inventory is not getting worked off very quickly because the natural ore producers, who are primarily in China and Indonesia, they continue to produce. They don't have really economic incentives the way that Western companies do. They produce because they need to keep people employed, and they're willing to bear the cost and produce at a loss, even at these low prices. So without a significant pickup in EV demand, which I don't think is going to happen in 2024, again, given the cautious consumer and the high interest rates, this industry, I think, will continue to, I mean, it'll grow, but it will not grow as fast as anticipated. As a result, that inventory levels will not be worked down as fast as people may think, and pricing will stay down lower longer.
That's definitely helpful. I think, you know, you think about all the materials that go into, you know, all the high growth industries, as well as, you know, the energy transition that's going on towards batteries, electric vehicles. It's amazing to see how sometimes we're getting a little bit of our head of our skis, right? And I think here is a good example, you know, given the lag in downchain supply and also within the material side. So very interesting. And then for us, I guess, any final thoughts before we sign off here? And we're definitely going to have to check in with you at the the end of the year to see how this played out and how your crystal ball's working into 2025.
Yeah, final thoughts. Like I said, I would reiterate what I've said at the beginning. Because of how diverse this industry is, both in terms of end markets and geographies that it participates in, if you're looking to invest money, there's going to be opportunities to invest in the specialty chemicals and material space and make money, whether you're doing it thematically or whether you're doing it from a point of view of, okay, these stocks are going to not be performing spectacularly, but they'll do better than an index that you're trying to beat or trying to compete against. Because volume is not as important a driver of either earnings or value of the company as the price raw material spread, and that remains positive, I think the more concerned investors get about demand and the recession, coming or not coming, or what higher interest rates may do to consumer demand, there is some safety to be had by looking at specialty chemical companies, particularly those that sell very close to the consumer. So paint companies, plastic companies that supply directly to the manufacturers of the HPs or the automotive industry. I think those companies will hold on to their pricing the longest as raw material prices decline, and will continue to deliver positive year-over-year earnings growth. And I remember early in my career when I got a call from an investor looking for a growth stock idea, and I asked them, what he meant by growth, and his response was anything with an up earnings year-over-year. So if we're getting into that environment again, where it's going to be difficult to find companies that deliver higher year-over-year results, I think specialty chemicals and materials industry is a place to look.
Excellent. Dimitri, this has been a great introduction for our audience to the materials and chemicals technology market, specialty chemicals more specifically. Thank you again for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So to read more of Dimitri's research, go to watertowerresearch.com, click on the sectors tab and scroll down to materials and chemical technology. Special thanks to the producers of the podcast, Nick Ford and Mohammed Dabdoud. We'll be back next week with another great in-depth interview. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, and we will see you next week.
The views expressed in this podcast may not necessarily reflect the views of Water Tower Research, LLC, aka WTR, and are provided for informational purposes only. The Water Tower Hour may not be distributed or reproduced without written consent of Water Tower Research and should not be considered research nor recommendation. WTR is an investor relations firm, not a licensed broker, broker-dealer, market maker, investment bank, underwriter, or investment advisor. Additional disclaimers can be found at watertowerresearch.com.